I was wondering if you'd talk, Robin, a little bit about how you got into the movement and how long you've been there.
I'm one of the women in the movement who came in via the male left, a refugee from the male left. I was, you know, involved in civil rights and in the anti-war movement and the student movement and the ecology movement and the peace movement and all of that, and was one of the women who, of which there were many, who began to sort of put it together that it was men who made the policy and the tactics and the strategy and the politics, in fact, of all of those movements, which was a really like hard thing to realize, because I mean it hurt. You thought that you were really putting your life on the line for a whole new kind of society where people would really be human to each other, and it was a very heavy disillusionment that the alternate culture, the left, all those things that were supposed to be in opposition to the establishment were structured along the same lines of male dominance and in fact patriarchy that the establishment was. And basically that we were doing the same jobs in the left that we would be permitted to do anywhere else. Typing, filing, taking care of the babies, being, you know, sex, being support, being all those things. We were getting our heads knocked in the same way that the men were. But when we came home from the demonstrations, you know, the men would sort of lie down on the sofa and say, wow, the tear gas was really heavy, and the woman would wipe the tear gas out of her eyes and go make supper. So, you know, after a while, this begins to penetrate even my thick skull. I got involved in some of the very humble, sort of timid women's caucuses that were forming in the left. And even those caucuses, which were hardly feminist, were hardly autonomous or separate, were met with such derision and such ridicule and, in fact, physical violence by our so-called revolutionary brothers that it was a consciousness-raising experience. And so gradually, we sort of moved further and further away, and I was then in a group that was formed, I guess that was 67, we first started meeting in New York, called New York Radical Women. We didn't even call ourselves Women's Liberation, let alone feminist. And out of that group came the Atlantic City action, the first mass demonstration, the Miss America pageant in 68. And then a lot of us who had worked on that pageant action became the first Coven of Witch. So out of New York Radical Women, in other words, came the first Red Stockings group in New York, the first witch group, a group called the Feminists. And that's really where the New York women's movement was born. And then I've been in that ever since. I mean, I remember it was a really heavy decision for me in 68. Like, that was one of the first big breaks. I decided not to go to Chicago, but instead to work on Atlantic City. Because Chicago was, what, in August, and Atlantic City was in September. And most of my friends, certainly all the men, and a lot of the women couldn't understand this. What, have you gone crazy? I mean, you're not going to go to Chicago, you're going to Atlantic City. What is that? Women. And it was like really very embarrassing decision, but I decided I really wanted to do that. And I have never been sorry yet. I mean, not only because I missed Chicago, but because that was the beginning of a whole new politics for me that changed my life personally, that changed it politically, as if the two were separable. And that really, that is like home to me now, is a politics that is part of my gut and not something that you do on the street or in a march and then go home and, you know, go back to your life. I mean, there's no getting away from it. It's in your kitchen, it's in your bed, it's in your brain. It's just a whole different way of relating to the world. And it's very beautiful and very difficult. Many, 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 in fact, by now thousands and thousands of women have come into the women's movement precisely that same route.
How many women were in the original, when you first started in the New York Radical Women?
I would say 20 to 25 women. And it was Kathy Sarachild and Shuley Firestone and Ellen Willis and Roz Baxendall. We would sort of meet in about three small groups for what was the precursor to consciousness raising. I don't even know that we called it that. but rap groups, and then we would all come together, the vast numbers of us, all 20, 25, would come together like once a month for a business meeting, right? Although we didn't have any business to transact, but we, you know, it was sort of like a way of keeping in touch with each other. And then after the pageant demonstration, the next, the meetings were open, of course, the next meeting of New York Radical Women, 150 new women showed up, and we didn't know what to do with them or us or I mean, it was really shocking. And so after a couple of meetings, rather unwieldy meetings of 100, 200 people, it was sort of decided to break down into small groups. So it's funny because at that point everybody in the New York women's movement knew everybody else by her first name, and that's not the case anymore. I mean, Witch Mary, you know, Joan Who, when there's, you know, thousands and thousands of people involved. But it's very beautiful to watch that happen.
What about Sisterhood is Powerful? How did that get started?
Well, it was funny. It really started very humbly. I was in Witch at that point, and I decided to get pregnant, which, had I been a radical feminist at the time, I would not have decided. But nonetheless, I decided to get pregnant and have a child. So I was pregnant, and I was taking karate. This was into my fifth month or so. I was still taking karate. Horrified my obstetrician, but still, it was really great. I was in really good shape. But it became clear that, you know, like, after a certain point, I would not be able to keep taking karate, and I didn't want to do street actions. I really didn't want to get shoved in the stomach by a cop's billy club. And I wanted, though, to be working on a project. For some time, people in the New York women's movement and also other sisters that we'd been in contact with in other cities, that the communication was like beginning, had been talking about the need for some mass available collection on what the women's movement was, for two reasons. One, that the mass media at that point, I mean, bad as it is now in covering feminist issues, it's 10 times better, 100 times better than it was then, where it was all in terms of bra burners and crazies and, you know, nuts. And there was no way to get that word out about our real politics and what we really were, and that we were human beings. The only way to get that politics out was through mimeographed papers that people had written in the women's movement, so that every time we went as a group or as individuals to schools or women's clubs or something to speak, we all had bursitis from carrying around these 2 tons of, you know, mimeographed materials. And we thought, gee, it would really be nice if, like, in bookstores or something, they could buy something that was really written with our own voices. So there I was, elephantile, you know, I mean, really lumbering around in my 6 month. Okay, all right, I'll work on this project. And at first, 3 or 4 people were working on it together with me. And 2 of them moved away. One of them decided she didn't want to work on the project. There was a sort of gradual process of attrition, and I found myself left with this book, which appalled me, because we had given some absurd date to the publisher, like we would be finished with it in 2 months. We thought, well, we'll collect these papers and we'll, you know. It took 1.5 years, as it turned out, to assemble it, because the more I got into it, the more I realized there were whole vast areas that the already existing women's movement literature didn't cover. So I started to commission articles, you know, like ask, would somebody like to write something on this, or do you know somebody who would like to write something on this subject? And that took a while. And so it was then finally finished by, it was finished in the spring of 70, and it came out that fall. And it's strange because I look at it now, and having become a radical feminist, I think that there are many parts of it that I don't agree with. But I still stand on it rather proudly, because I think it's a really good conglomeration of so many viewpoints, you know, in the movement. And there were a lot of fights with the publisher. I mean, one of the things we insisted on was that it be published simultaneously in paperback, which they didn't want to do, because, of course, they want to make money on the hardcover first. And we won that fight. And another fight was that all the royalties, every penny, had to go back to the women's movement, which was very complicated. We had to set up a corporation and stuff. But so far, about $20,000 in royalties have gone back to the movement. And the book has sold, it's nearing 250,000 in paperback. And it's something like, I think, 20,000 in hardcover. And it keeps selling. Just a few weeks ago, I was up at Random House, and And my editor there, who is a woman, said with delight that one of the male editors had come in the other day and said, "Can't understand it. That book is still selling. It. It's the third bestseller that Random House has ever had. I just, you know, we thought when they took so long to put it together that it would, by that time this women's movement thing would have blown over. You know, it would peak and be finished like a fad. Now it's 3 years later. Can't understand it."
You're also a poet, and you have another book coming out too.
Yeah. This is different. This is I was a serious poet before I became before I became political at all, let alone in the women's movement, which is where I really became political. and I had always intended to you know, publish books of poetry, had published in small literary magazines and stuff. But I'm really glad that I waited, because now the book is a feminist book of poetry. And it's a real attempt. It's been a very hard thing to do for me. And I feel that just really in the past year or so, things have begun to come together. My own consciousness as a poet and my aesthetics and my craft with my political consciousness as a feminist, because I want the poems to be... You know, people have a strange attitude toward poetry, that it's either a very kishy kind of greeting card sentimental stuff, or that if it's good, it has to be totally ununderstandable. And I think that that's absurd, that poetry is a living art, and it's an ancient one, and one that women have long used brilliantly. I mean, there have been great women poets. And so that I want the poems to be very accessible to people, and I also want them to be used as political tools. So, in other words, what I'm trying for is a combination of what our politics are as women, with to be phrased in a way that really moves women, that speaks with a collective voice, and that uses me just as a vehicle, and that talks about concrete problems that we all have, and concrete pain, and concrete strengths, and ways of fighting that, and not in a way of jargon or rhetoric or, you know, like socialist realist art or any of that stuff. And it's a hard combination to make mesh, and I feel only really within the last year or so has that happened. So that the book, which is called Monster, which comes out in November, again in paperback as well as hardcover, another fight. They thought this time they could get away with the cloth bound first. It has those poems in it, and I'm really very, very happy with it. And half the royalties of that book go back to the women's movement. Excuses for not moving are, in number, age, diversity, and sheer prolific art, the Baroque high genius of the slave brain. We are, therefore we justify. We fear. We know it will not really come through personal solutions, organizing the workers, picketing, voting, speaking, writing, living with men, not living with men, sleeping with women, not sleeping with women, having panels, speak-outs, speak-ins, speak-ups, marches, street theater, learning karate, or eating natural foods. We know it will not really come, even from doing all these things sincerely for years, until, as elder, eminent, revolutionary feminists, we can pass the flaming matchstick on to younger sisters. We fear. Therefore, we have reason to fear. Excuses for not moving are too myriad to list here. To even catalog that ingenious procession is to spend one's life successfully in hiding. Excuses for moving, on the other hand, are singular. It is fear, phoenix in paranoia. It is despair sharpening itself toward boredom. It is activity in the process of discovering energy. It is what passes through the mist of all my nightmares. The axe blade, rampant, carved in the profile of a woman's face. It is my own unutterable name, which I cannot yet pronounce.
One really basic feeling I had about your poetry, which I really appreciated, was that it was growing. It wasn't a lot of poetry, at least to me, seems to be absolute, the answer. I mean, and I felt like that your poetry, that you were growing and you were talking about that, and you gave us, when we were listening to it, reading it, it gave us room to grow too.
Oh, I'm really glad. I'm really glad to hear that, because, okay, listen, I am so far from having all the answers. I am so far from knowing which direction my head is turned on straight in the morning, or crooked. I mean, that I can't tell you. And the only way that I keep sane is trying to commit that confusion, but also that commitment to paper, and am no longer ashamed of, you know, of saying that you know, I have no correct line, and in fact I don't know whether anyone ever needs to have one, or whether this correct line should exist. I mean, we're an oppressed people. We're the oldest oppressed people in the world. We're more than half the species. We have been subjugated for 10 to 12,000 years. It is neither surprising nor wrong that we haven't come up shazam, you know, in the past 5 years of this new women's movement, with all the answers to every question, and that we don't just lay them out. I'm very glad that we haven't. It shows that we are not falling into the terrible pitfalls of hierarchy and of male supremacy and of narrow-minded provincialism that the left did, and in fact what destroyed the left. So I'm very glad that we are still trying, with all the hassles we go through with the outside world and with each other as women, that we still are trying to grope our way toward some collective consciousness and move from there. And that's what I hope the poems speak from and to. I think also that's the only kind of valid politics that comes from the people up and out, rather than from a textbook or a leader or a vanguard party or any of those things down, because that just carries the seeds of all the old stuff right with it. You're not Lady Bountifuling on somebody else's oppression. You're not parasiting off somebody else's oppression. I mean, I know that when I was in the civil rights movement, it took me a while to realize this, but I finally realized that what the black community had said to whites in the civil rights movement was obviously, clearly true, which was that, okay, it's all very well, you come down to Selma, you go on freedom marches, you go on freedom summers. What's going to happen when the crunch really comes down? I mean, where are you going to be at the barricades? You are doing this as a way of sort of getting off your guilt and as a way of proving what a marvelous, non-racist, you know, delightful, groovy, revolutionary person you are. But you're still white, and when things get heavy, you can always run like lightning back to the white community and be perfectly safe. When you fight in terms of your own oppression, that is not an option, because it's around you everywhere. It's on bus ads and subway ads, and it's with the man you live with, or if you don't live with a man, it's the man you have to work for. I mean, it is just everywhere.
I was wondering, Robin, if you could tell us a little bit about radical feminism and the politics it involves.
Well, I guess it differs from the other areas of the women's movement, both in a little bit in ideology and a lot in sort of strategy or the kinds of projects. By the other areas, I mean generally sort of the women's rights area of the women's movement that works within the system, groups like NOW and stuff like that, or the women's liberation, generally termed area, which still sort of is tied pretty closely with the male left. And radical feminism has only one priority, which is women, all women, and is based on what we now know as historical fact, which is that women were the first oppressed people, that with the overthrow of the early gynocracies or matriarchies, which were intensely humanistic in the real sense of the word, beautiful societies, with the rise of patriarchy, you got the beginning of property ownership. We, in fact, women were the first property. And also the beginning of all of those little goodies that we now live under: war, racism, ecological disaster, competition, greed, etc. So that sexism is really the root, and that we're tired of sort of hacking at the branches and having them grow back, and this time we want to get at the root itself. But the way that ideology, if one were to call it that, gets translated into action, I think, is even more important. And the kind of radical feminist projects that have been happening around the country, I've been traveling a lot in the last year and have been really very exciting. Like things like, well, the kind of projects that really meet the needs of women, like the free women's legal clinics that are springing up. There's one in San Francisco, there's one in New York, there shortly will be one in Chicago, to teach women how to do-it-yourself divorces, to teach women their own tenant rights, custody rights, all of that mystification of the law being broken down. The self-help clinics, the medical clinics, which are a fantastic development, staffed sometimes by women doctors, but mostly by paraprofessionals, women who have dedicated themselves to really learning and then demystifying medicine for the rest of us, so that we get in touch with our own bodies and we learn how, in most cases, we can treat ourselves and each other. The anti-rape squads and things like the Rape Crisis Center, which is, well, the first, of course, was here, is here in D.C., but that's like been a real model, and that's being picked up now in a lot of cities. We're trying to start one in New York. Chicago women, I gather, visited recently and are going to be starting one there, and that's a fantastic development, where there begin to be alternative institutions that are fluid and that are also really disciplined, I mean, that stick around and really are committed, so that women do not have to rely on, for example, when they're raped, male policemen who laugh at them, male doctors who ask them if they enjoyed being raped, male judges and attorneys who put the onus of the guilt on them, so that women who need medical care don't have to go to male doctors who tell them that they're crazy and hysterical and don't tell them what the pills are or what the shot is and pat them on the head and say, well, now look, dear, I mean, you don't really want to know these things. You know, I mean, that whole degrading way in which we have to just survive from day to day, it's a just a totally new way to be able to breathe if you can go to your sisters. And not only go to your sisters just sort of to be serviced and then go away, but go to your sisters and then become part of that project. And that's beautiful, because that then mushrooms and it's like teaching each other to teach each other more and more and more. But those kinds of projects, which are really concrete and in communities, and are spreading, and then it works in one city, so another city picks it up, really have a daily effect on all our lives as women. And I don't mean by us only those women in the women's movement, I mean all women, which is a very different kind of, it comes from a different kind of attitude, I think, than reform feminism, which would feel that the aim is to get more women in Congress, more women in the Senate, more women on the boards of corporations and so forth. That does not, I mean, the best that can happen there is tokenism, even if you get those few more women in. The worst that can happen is sellout, that you become the oppressor because you've played so long by his rules. And it's very boring also, and it does not, having, you know, five more women in Congress or one more woman to make the vast number of two in the Senate, will not change your life, you know, or mine, or any of the sisters who are listening. Whereas things like the Rape Crisis Center, the legal centers, the self-help clinics do. Another thing that I really love that's happening around the country is a whole drive against pornography. So that I think that's a really good... Also, that has made a very strong link with all those women that the media always says we don't relate to. You know, I mean, a great many of whom are already in the women's movement. The sort of middle American housewife. And God knows the media has tried to keep her and us separate, tried to say that we're all crazy, hippie, castrating, da-da-da-da-da, and that she is a nice woman. And she is finding out, and they are finding out, that she is just as crazy and castrating and beautiful and angry as we are, and that also we have a great deal in common with her. And in fact with our own mothers, and beginning to make a sort of tender little fragile bridges across that gap, because we all need each other. I mean, black women and white women and Chicano women and middle class women and poor women and straight women and lesbian women and our grandmothers and high school students. That's what is exciting about the women's movement. There are different issues, obviously, that are more important to different sets of women within that women's movement. I think certain issues like rape, like pornography, cut across all of those divisions, because those are institutions. And then there are certainly other issues ranging from job discrimination to the welfare mother trying to survive with anything approaching human dignity, that may seem more disparate issues, but that do come together and are I think we'll be doing so even more in the future. I don't know, I have my glum moments because it is not easy, like we talked about before, to have feminist politics, since it never leaves you a moment's peace, in a sense. I mean, it takes over your whole life. But you realize, and that's where the good moments come, that your life was taken over anyway before. It's just that it was by men. And you would rather have it taken over by yourself. So that it's also, I mean, for my glum days, I mean, there are more days when I feel really pretty happy. And not only for myself, being in the women's movement, but also because I think we're going to seize power and we're going to fix it all up. And it'll be very difficult, but we'll be very glad when it's all, you know, over and done with, when children can be human beings, when we don't have to die at the rate of 10,000 each year on butchered abortion tables, as we still do in the U.S., despite the few token reform laws. When we can walk down any street alone or with other sisters or however at any hour of the day or night, when we're strong, when we know self-defense, when we can treat each other medically, when we can help each other legally, when eventually that technology will be under our control to create wonders the like of which it's hardly possible to conceive, and when the whole system, which is rotten to the core, will be destroyed and human beings can be really people. So that this year, which has been pretty tiring too, has still been like a, I don't know, like an encyclopedic view of what's happening in this country, and it is happening, and it's very beautiful. And I hear also from people who went to Europe this summer, and from two women who came from the French women's movement, Mouvement Libération des Femmes, and a woman who came from the British women's movement. They had just had a pan-European feminist conference.
Really?
Yeah. That the Danish Red Stockings had come to, and the Dolly Minna from Holland had come to, and the Italian women, and the brave women from Spain, who literally have to function underground. I mean, they cannot even receive materials by mail. And there had been this whole assembly of European women, and it had been fantastic. And the Danish women were saying that we should all be plotting the first feminist international conference in Stockholm in, what did they say, like 74, you know, which really, I mean, which may be a total fantasy dream, but they seem not to think so, and it's, just even to think about it is really exciting.
Yeah.
There's a big movement in Japan, there's a very strong growing movement in Africa. Canada, of course, has by now 3, 4, 5-year-old women's movement, and Australia has a new one. So there's no stopping us, you realize that, Chris, you realize that, Sharon, you know that, I mean...
Yeah, I get the message.
Yeah, we're on our way.